Kevin Buckland from UK, arts ambassador for 350.org, an artist working to integrate the arts and creative communication into the fast-growing youth climate movement.
I found myself in quite an interesting situation for a while now, and I've actually, in hearing this, realized that I've actually been involved with COP inside as an artist since COP 13 in Montreal. And coming into that, actually realizing specifically what a lack of culture there was in that space, and realizing that that actually flows into our social movements as well. I've been working very closely with the Coalition Climat 21, and that is a group of 150 different organizations who have come together and formed the largest coalition ever on climate that is willing to do disobedient action. It's very historic what has happened here. But there was no one in that process engaged in culture. There were tons of artists with fantastic ideas, and there were tons of activists looking to be creative and fun and engaging and participatory, but the structures are not in place to create those bridges between the two. And when we're talking about social change, to me, that's actually the spot where art and culture can lead social change. Is, let's think about the fact that any woman wearing pants here, or anyone that's used contraception, those rights were won through disobedience. Yes, the cultural shift is very important, but they need to be engaged with larger movement strategies for change. And I really believe artists can play a key role in leading on that change, but they're not being properly engaged, and thus we have groups of artists sitting around talking to each other while groups of activists sit around and talk to each other. And right now, forget about the Bourget, I think the most important meeting that will happen during the COP is happening right now. There's an international meeting of organizers from all around the world talking about the next steps after Paris, the spring, and moving towards a series of mass direct actions and civil disobediences. I don't think there's any artists in that room. And so this is the space we need to be occupying as cultural advocates and players. It is wonderful to do things in the institutions, but when we're talking about limited space, let's remember the street and the context we're in. I was involved with, you can call it an art project, that I think was quite successful. And when we're talking about scale, I think we need to be thinking about scale. And it was the People's Climate March in New York. We set up an amazing arts organizing structure which allowed us to articulate the diversity of issues inside climate, and 400,000 people came out. I think that's the scale we need to be operating on, and the people that can mobilize people are organizers. So, and they need us. They really, the formula of activism is over. Yesterday, actually, someone said the paradigm of activism is changing. A lot of the important work around sustainable activism that's been happening in terms of how is it that the values we are embodying with our activism are so different from what we're advocating for. We're stressed out, we're not sleeping, we're like running around, we're, you know, not making good decisions, there's hierarchy. How can we actually be embodying the solutions we are advocating for through our activism? And I think that that actually necessitates the decentralized structure, which is actually what art requires. Artists art, I guess, is based upon the individual magic of each of us. And it is that is needed to come together, is that all of us come alive as fully as possible and bring our magic to the table. And I think that is what we are starting to see a shift of. In terms of the activist, we need to do something great. We'll do a petition, and then we'll do a march, and then we'll do some lobbying, and we'll deliver the petition. That is changing. And what is interesting is that is changing right now on the streets of Paris. That paradigm was just destroyed because all public gatherings of more than two people with a political message is banned. So we are obliged to be as creative as possible. And that question of political message, what is the role of art and culture there to come through and play in that space of, okay, well, what can two of us do? What happens when you grab the hand of the third person? And that is precisely the, those are precisely the ingredients being concocted towards December 12th, which will be a massive civil disobedience here in Paris. And that is changing rapidly. And everyone can and is invited to be involved at the 104, the 104 cultural space, the people's space, that will be open from the 7th to the 11th. There will be trainings there in direct action. And so maybe one of the roles of artists is actually to start thinking about our role as the medium is the world itself. We are artists in the Anthropocene. How much longer are we going to be speaking about a problem or educating about it or representing it instead of engaging directly with it and changing? And the beautiful theater that was the Ende Gelände coal mine shutdown this summer of thousands of people in like a lunar landscape dressed in white, that is the ground of the theater of the Anthropocene. I'm not sure if it's actually in the theaters itself.
Kathy Jednil Kijiner from Marshall Islands. Poet focuses on raising awareness surrounding the issues and threats faced by the people of the islands.
I do come from the Marshall Islands, and I got into poetry when I started doing spoken word, slam poetry, when I was a senior in high school. And for me, I came into poetry in this under a training that saw poetry as more than just an expression of feelings and leaves and grass and you know, things like that, but that poetry should also engage people and that it should speak to social justice movements. And so the training I received was from Poetry for the People, which is in Berkeley, California. And I was always taught that poetry should do more and it should engage people on these social issues. And so that's what I've always seen my poetry as what it's for. It's to bring these kinds of issues to light. And it's also the fact that the Marshall Islands is completely invisible on the map. You literally, if you look, the Marshall Islands is, you see the text, the Marshall Islands, but you don't see the land. So we are literally invisible on the map. And then we're also invisible in global discussions. We're invisible in the media. My face is, you know, different because it's brown, because it's indigenous, and we are always spoken about, but we are never heard from. And so I see poetry as that platform for sharing the stories and sharing our people's struggles, you know, with not just climate change, but also militarization, also colonialism, also nuclear testing. And so what's really interesting to me is that recently I remember before we were heading into COP21, I was discussing with some of my friends who were organizers who are, you know, in the political scene a little bit more of the COP. And they were telling me as a poet that, you know, and I'm here with a group of poets who won the Spoken Word for the World competition that I was curating with Global Climate Call for Action, a nonprofit. We put up a competition asking people to submit videos of spoken word on climate change. And the top four came here to Paris with me to perform. And they were telling me that they cannot talk about the links between terrorism and militarization and climate change within the COP. They cannot. You would just be laughed out of the room. It would just be ridiculous, right? And so they were telling me, this is where you and your poetry can actually speak up. And so art, I think for me, what I've realized just recently along this, you know, as I've been processing this trip and processing, you know, things as I've come to Paris and gone through DC and getting my visa and all that, is that art has a sense of freedom. That these climate change discussions and being a politician doesn't necessarily have. I can speak as an indigenous woman, as a Marshall Islander, as a youth even, you know, because I'm still younger than 30. So, and, you know, and I can talk about these connections between colonialism, nuclearization, between capitalism, and I can create those links for people through art. And so I think for me, that's where art is so important. And having that space, you know, now I'm just realizing now, you know, in listening to you all, that, you know, being allowed to perform a spoken word poem in the United Nations in front of world leaders at the climate summit last September, man, they were taking a gamble with me. Now that I'm really looking back, and they really took a gamble letting me do that. And I'm glad they did, because I remember after I performed my poem, Dear Mata Fele Benam, which is a poem to my daughter about climate change and what we're going to do to save the world for her generation and save our islands. After I performed that poem, it changed the atmosphere of the summit entirely. You know, all of these politicians and dignitaries and diplomats, they all came up to me and they were saying, they're telling me about their own children and how my poem made me think of them. And they were telling me about their daughters and their sons. And suddenly the atmosphere was not, you know, they wanted to hold my daughter who was with me at the time. And, you know, it wasn't so politically charged anymore. It wasn't cold. It was so much warmer. And I think that's what art can do, is it can touch people's humanity. And so that's always been my aim with poetry, is to bring poetry from the ivory tower. You know, I remember a poem from Ruth Foreman, a poet mentor of mine, who said poetry should ride the bus, the idea that poetry shouldn't be unreachable, it should be reachable. And so I think that's kind of what it does. It brings the tangible to these untangible rooms. Yeah.